Welcome to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio, a program that features interviews with local residents and people of note who share information, stories, and ideas on issues about living in central Iowa, the heart of Iowa. Today, we are speaking with Rebecca Brown, who is an Ames resident and will be returning to Iowa State University in fall as a graduate student. You may have heard us mention Rebecca on KHOI because she's a volunteer engineer here and she's really good at that. But today, we are going to pick her brain about something completely different. It's something she's good at as well, and that is composting with worms in one's own home. Worm composting is an easy and effective way to get rid of kitchen scraps as well as create fertilizer. In this case, worm castings for our gardens and houseplants. This is an interview Rebecca and I recorded a few weeks ago, and I hope you enjoy it and learn something from it. This is Ursula Rudenberg, your host on Heart of Iowa, speaking with Rebecca Brown. Today with Rebecca Brown, who is a Iowa State graduate student. Rebecca Brown is
a worm enthusiast.
A worm composting enthusiast.
Sure. That works.
Rebecca, why do you know about what do we call this?
Vermicomposting.
Vermicomposting.
It was a focus of my undergraduate thesis. My thesis was on community composting with a focus in vermicomposting because it was one of the simplest methods to use, especially in dorms and apartments and small houses.
Yep. And this was at Iowa State?
Yep, this was part of the industrial design program at Iowa State.
So, Becca, I'm somebody who would like to make compost in my house with worms. Tell me what I need to do first.
First, you need a bin, and then you need some bedding, so that can be leaves or newspapers, shredded paper. And then you need some food, preferably rotten, because worms only eat food that's rotting. And then you need your worms. And then something to cover the worms and the food with. You always want to make sure that you bury the food. You don't just want to leave it on top because that would cause unwanted pests and gnats and smell, and that's no good.
Okay, so let's slow down again and go back. If I want to do vermicomposting in my house, what is the first thing I need to go out and get?
You need a bin.
And what kind of bin?
It can be just about anything. The most common type is a plastic bin that's like a storage bin. Plastic's okay.
And about the size of two by 4 feet?
Yeah, you know, like 2 feet long, maybe like 6 inches high, be like a foot wide sort of thing.
And does it need a lid?
It's not an absolute requirement. I have like a flower pot with no drainage hose, no lid. Make sure you cover the food. I cover mine with shredded paper, and that's good enough to keep the smell and such down.
You do it in a flower pot?
Mm-hmm. Like a standard foot-wide flower pot. It's like a foot high.
So is this like a terracotta?
Mm-hmm. And
why are you using a terracotta flower pot instead of a plastic bin?
So during my thesis, I was designing my own worm bin for other people with the idea that not everyone wants to get dirty. So I went out looking for kind of outside-the-box worm bins that would be attractive to people who are kind of a little freaked out by worms or the idea of worms.
So for you, it was a thing of how it was looking good.
Right.
There was no other reason than looks.
Well, something that would look good, but at the same time be functional.
In terms of functionality, there's no difference between the plastic bin and the terracotta bin.
Right. Except that it's more compact. So red wigglers are surface worms. You'll find them in the first 5 or so inches of soil. And
red wigglers are the kind of worm that we're using?
Yes, because they eat faster and they reproduce faster. They eat half their body weight in food every day.
So let's go back to, I went out and bought a plastic bin or a terracotta flower pot.
Yep. A house. House for your worms.
We got the bin. Okay, you bring the bin home. Is it okay if it has a hole in the bottom?
It depends on how big the hole is. If it's, you know, a standard flower pot, they'll have that big hole in the bottom for drainage. That might be a little bit too big. Your worms might fall out. Or you might get the bottom of your floor dirty or wherever it's at.
But you don't need a hole for drainage.
It's not necessary. Some people say it is, but you just have to keep a better eye on it. You know, make sure to get air more often, because the point of the holes is to allow air to circulate through the bin.
Okay, so now what do I do?
Now you start saving your vegetable and fruit leftovers. Keep them in the plastic bag to let them decompose just a little bit. You know, they'll get brown, a little moldy is okay. The worms will still eat it. In the meantime, you'll want to maybe start collecting leaves or start shredding paper. Also, order your worms.
You want to start collecting food scraps, not meat.
Not meat, not dairy. When I teach the kids at the school, I like to say they are really, really, really healthy vegans.
So vegetables.
Yeah.
What about eggs and eggshells?
Eggshells are okay. I haven't experimented with eggs. Some people say no, but I think it really depends on the size of your worm bin. Like if you have a really enormous worm pile, I think an egg or two will be okay.
Okay, but you're not recommending eggs. You're recommending vegetables and fruit.
Yeah, and eggshells and things.
Okay, so you start collecting them, and you put them in a bag where it's sealed, so they start rotting?
Yeah, you know, it'll start getting brown and a little moldy. I just kind of hang a plastic bag on near one of my cupboards.
So it doesn't have to be sealed. It just has to be there.
It doesn't have to be sealed. Actually, it's probably better if it's not.
Okay, so you start collecting food scraps, vegetable and fruit scraps. What about bread?
Bread's good. Some people don't recommend a lot of bread, but in my experience, bread's been all right, like the crusts of bread or pasta or something.
And what about coffee grounds?
Coffee grounds are very good. Worms love coffee grounds.
Okay.
And the coffee filter.
Do they work faster when they eat the coffee grounds?
I think because worms don't have teeth, and I think the coffee grounds are kind of like a sand. You know, they help them chew their food a little bit.
So I was thinking maybe the caffeine would. Anyway.
Good point.
You're saving your food scraps, and then you're collecting leaves. You may in fall collected leaves in bags or gotten them from the city of Ames, where you can pick up wonderful leaves down by the cemetery. Or if you don't have that, then what do you want to do?
You could use shredded paper.
Shredded paper. What kind of paper?
It could be any kind of paper, not glossy. So, you know, just think if it's safe to decompose outside, then you're good.
Newspaper.
Newspaper is okay. Even the ink in newspaper, I believe, is soy-based, so you're okay there. What I do with newspaper is I just shred it into maybe half-inch lengths, it's like a half an inch wide. So I just shred that and then, you know, make little tiny squares about an inch by an inch, and that's really good bedding for the worms. The worms will eat their bedding because it's yummy and edible. So you'll want to make sure you replenish it over time.
Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, and this is an interview with Rebecca Brown. She is explaining how to build your own worm composting box.
Okay, so you shred the newspaper mm-hmm. or paper in about an inch long.
Yeah.
So then you've got your pile of newspaper or pile of leaves. That's kind of the same thing?
Yeah.
And you've got your food that's been rotting for maybe, what, about a week or two?
Yeah, about a week.
Mm-hmm. And now you have to get your worms, right?
Yep. Now you go find some worms.
Where do you find worms?
Well, I ordered my worms online from an Iowa farm, but the website's not there anymore. But you can order it from other websites. There, I believe there's one called Uncle Jim's Worm Farm or something of the sort. But, you know, if you Google worm composting or ordering red wigglers, you're bound to get so many. I believe there's some nurseries or other arboretums or things might have them. You know, it might be worth your while to call and ask.
And what you're asking for is red wigglers.
Red wigglers, not earthworms. They're not the same. Earthworms are deeper in the ground. And, you know, they do the same type of composting, but they wouldn't be very happy in a typical worm bin. So,
where do red wigglers live in the wild?
They're actually not from North America. I believe they're from Europe originally. But when people came over by ships, they would bring their plants with them, and so naturally red wigglers came over. And they're also great to use for fishing, and then people would, you know, oh, they're worms, so I'm just going to leave them here in the wild, which was all right for the most part. But in some places, it's not, actually. Worms can be actually really destructive to an ecosystem. So I read somewhere once that there is this forest in Minnesota where over the years, this forest adapted a type of ecosystem that didn't have worms. It used kind of a anaerobic composting process. So the leaves would fall, the trees would shed their seeds, and it would take years for these trees to even germinate. But that was just how it worked over time. And then red wigglers came in because it was near a lake and people would just kind of toss the worms aside. And they started eating so quickly, started eating everything. And so now the trees weren't able to grow as quickly because all the leaves are now gone and the deer are starting to eat the new trees, and it's actually a problem.
Hmm.
But that's a fun fact.
So red wigglers are bred, though, in captivity a lot for fishing and for composting?
Mm-hmm.
And do people order them for their gardens, too, or not?
Yeah, people order them for their gardens. It's really common to, before you start planting, you put your red wigglers on the ground and then maybe cover it with cardboard and then wet it down. And then that's a tilling method, a natural mm-hmm. tilling method that people will use in their gardens.
Now, when I work in the garden, if I dig very much, I run into worms pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Are those red wigglers or are those earthworms?
It might be a combination of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of depends on where you're at.
The earthworms are indigenous to here?
I think so. I'm not exactly sure, though.
But North America did have worms before the Europeans.
Yeah, they had worms.
Uh-huh.
Just not everywhere in North America.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so these guys have been bred in captivity
for
vermicomposting
mm-hmm.
and probably for fishing, too.
Mm-hmm.
But we won't talk about that. The hard side of being a red wiggler.
Yeah, but they get fed, so they're pretty happy, I think.
So anyway, if you Google red wigglers,
mm-hmm. you can order them online.
And they show up alive and happy?
They show up alive and happy in a little box with shredded paper and sometimes in a cloth bag.
Okay.
When I first got mine, I was kind of freaked out for some reason. I had worked a long shift at work and hadn't slept in a while because I was working on my thesis. So some part of me thought something was going to jump out and eat me, but the whole time I'm like, this is really irrational, Becca. Calm down.
They're just worms.
They're just worms.
This is Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, and this is an interview with Rebecca Brown. She is explaining how to build your own worm composting box.
Now, when you get your worms, especially when you order them online, they had a real odyssey of getting there. They haven't been fed for a while. They're all right, but they're a little tense and a little stressed out. So when you put them in your bin, it's good to have food that's rotting because they're going to be really hungry and stressed out. And if you give them food right away, they'll be much happier.
Okay.
But at the same time, you're still going to have some who are, will abandon ship and they'll just crawl out of your bin. And it's relatively normal for a bin like that.
Where do they go?
They just go out. So they're unhappy for some reason, so they'll just get out of there. When worms do that after you order them online, that's typically normal. I just pick them back up and put them in, and I reassure them that everything is okay, mm-hmm. and I will be friends with them forever.
So for a few days after the trauma of being in the U.S. Post, you kind of got to keep an eye on the worms mm-hmm. because some of them are kind of wandering away from the bin like people wander away from car accidents,
yeah.
kind of in a daze, right?
Yeah, they're okay. just really freaked out. But if it's months later and your worms are doing it, then you are doing something wrong.
Okay, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
This is Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host today, and I'm speaking with Rebecca Brown, who has been explaining how to build your own worm composting box. So let's keep going. Okay, so now you've got your bin, mm-hmm. you've got your dried leaves and shredded paper, mm-hmm. you've got your rotted food, mm-hmm. and you've got your worms.
Yep.
Now what happens?
So now you take your bin. And, you know, whether or not you want to put holes in it is up to you. There's all sorts of methods for this type. But essentially, the basics, you have your bin, you put down your bedding, about an inch or two, maybe three of shredded paper and leaves. And make sure you crumple up the dry leaves if you can, so it's easier for them to eat.
Big pieces are harder for the worms to eat than little pieces.
Yep. So you put down your bedding.
Inch and a half of leaves and paper?
About 2 inches, really, depending on how big your worm bin is. And then you put down the rotted food. It's better if it's chopped up, too. Same way, same reason, because it's easier for them to eat.
So you may want to chop up your food before you rot it.
Right.
So it's a little bit less obnoxious for you.
Indeed. So then you put down your food, and then you put your worms, and then you put another 2 or 3 inches of the rest of your shredded paper.
Okay, how deep is the food?
It's just kind of sprinkled over.
Does it have to cover all the shredded leaves and paper?
It doesn't have to be. It's probably better for the worms because, you know, they'll travel instead of being all clumped into one spot.
Doesn't have to be as deep as the bedding.
Oh, no.
Spread some food on there. Mm-hmm. And then what do you do?
And then you put your worms on there.
You put the worms in with the food?
Yep. Put them right on top, maybe spread them out a little bit. You tell them everything's okay. Mommy or daddy is here to take care of you. And then you cover them with your paper or leaves.
You put more leaves and paper on top. And how much?
About 2 or 3 inches.
Mm-hmm. And then, so it's about a little bit more on top than below.
Yeah. And that's, you know, again, to help with the smell. It's to help keep them there, help keep pests out or your cat or whoever is curious.
The first layer is bedding, which is basically their home.
Mm-hmm.
The food is food, and then the worms are the worms, and then the stuff on top is kind of to finish it off.
Yeah. And then you want to put some water on there, too.
On where?
On the bedding.
On the top of the whole thing?
Yep.
Pour on a cup of water. You have a sprinkling. Like, how do you get the water on there?
I usually use a sponge or I use a cup. It doesn't matter how you water them. It shouldn't be no wetter than a wrung-out sponge.
It should not be wetter than a wrung-out sponge.
Right. So, you know, when you wring out a sponge and then how that feels. Yeah, it's damp.
So that should be damp.
Mm-hmm. Not if you were to pick them up, water would be dripping out.
So how do you tell how damp it is down below?
That's where having holes in the bottom could be helpful because, you know, if there's water coming out, kind of like when you have a plant almost.
So if water's coming out the bottom, that's enough.
That's probably enough or maybe even too much.
It's a good idea to put some holes in the bottom of the bin so that it can drain.
Mm-hmm. And you can have a bin underneath it too.
Yeah, and a bin. And so maybe 10 holes in the bottom?
Yeah, maybe 10.
Like pricks or real holes?
Real holes. You don't want them too big because then your worms will fall through.
And so not big enough for a worm because worms are not that big.
They're not that big, but they also, you know, they're not, if it's like.
They're not trying to wiggle out of the holes.
Right.
Is there a way to test it other than to watch the water going through?
You just dig around.
Just put your hand in
and
feel if it's really dry or damp?
Yeah, don't be scared. Or, you know, have a spoon, a cooking spoon to dig around and to observe.
And why are you giving it water?
Well, just like everything else, worms need moisture to survive. Worms breathe through their skin, so we have the benefit that our lungs are inside of us, and so it's always moist inside of us, but worms don't have that. They can dry out really easily.
So they need to absorb moisture through their skin for their organs to function.
Right.
So is this when it rains why worms always come to the top, because they're trying to absorb the moisture from the rain?
I think they're coming out of the top because it's too wet below.
Oh, so they don't want to drown.
Yeah, but you don't want to water them too much because they will drown. It's more common for worms, in my experience, it's more common for a worm to escape the bin if there's too much water than if there's not enough.
Mm-hmm. So they're worried about drowning.
Yeah, and so they'll just dry out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of thinking maybe drowning's a really bad way.
Right, so in other words, they need oxygen down there too. They're using oxygen.
Yeah. It's going to look like you're snuffing them out, but they're not. When you put your bin together, it might look like
you're burying them.
Yeah.
Alive.
But it's okay because they're worms. And
there's air down there.
Right. And when they eat, they're making pathways for air. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how they aerate the ground.
You've covered it. You put the water on.
Mm-hmm.
Now what happens?
Now you just let them go. Some people have a lid with more holes on top for reassurance or for whatever other reason. it's not absolutely necessary if you...
The worms aren't going to come out and get you.
They're not going to come out and get you.
You're not going to crawl into your bed at night.
You can't crawl in your ear or anything, but...
They're not going to come up on your dinner table and eat your food up there.
No. Although I have seen designs where people incorporate worm bins into their tables.
Really?
Yeah. And then it just makes it easier to put the scraps in, you know?
So you just shove the scraps into some sort of bin around your table edge where the worms live?
Kind of in an inset. Yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, you just let them...
online?
Yeah, when I was doing my research on worm bins, there's all
worm bins
sorts of
on dinner
things.
Tables.
Yeah, there's also people use burials as worm bins. I mean, you could use anything. And the beauty about worm composting is your ability to experiment with anything. There are people who've put genes into their worm bins, and the worms will eat everything but the brass.
Interesting. How often do you put more food in the bin?
Depending on how big your worm bin is, it's about a couple cups a week. For a pound of worms, maybe like 2 cups of food per week.
You add it on top or do you...
You bury it. So
you bury it.
Always make sure you want to bury your food or else you'll get gnats and...
You just kind of dig down a little bit below the top layer and put it down where the other stuff is and then cover it again.
Yep. When you go online to read more about how to put a bin together, what you should feed your worms, there will be a lot of people who will tell you, don't ever put potatoes in your bin or don't ever put oranges in your bin. But, you know, in my experience, I can put a whole orange in my bin and they'll be perfectly fine. It just really depends on where your worms came from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have distinct personalities, entire societies.
So you can give each worm a name.
You could.
You can.
It might be hard to distinguish the features, but you could try really hard.
Do worms sleep?
No one's really sure. Probably. You know, it's hard to really study a worm because when people approach them, they go away. They might go deeper in the ground. Mm-hmm. And there are worms that are feet long in Australia, and they think that they're going extinct because of all the construction that's going on. And they're so, they're like a mile deep in the ground, and all the vibrating from construction is, and they're so sensitive that they just fall apart. So it's hard to know how long exactly a worm lives or, you know, those sorts of things because it just...
Okay, you've put all this together, you've maybe put a lid on it, maybe not, and you set it somewhere, and you probably have something underneath it to let it drain, you know, to catch the water. Now, what's happening inside the bin?
Now, the worms are working with bacteria to decompose your food.
But how many worms are there in there?
When you order worms, you typically want to order about a pound of worms.
A pound, which is about how many worms?
Oh, man, it's...
10, 20?
No, it's like hundreds of worms.
Hundreds of worms?
Yeah.
So when you let your worms go in your thing, you're letting go more than 100 worms?
Just about.
And they all have room in there?
They all have room. They all like to snuggle. There's like formulas for worm poundage to bin ratio. I don't know them specifically. I just kind of feel it out. Yeah, so you get about a pound of worms, and then they're eating away. If you put fresh food in there, they won't eat it. They'll either chew through their castings again or go eat something else.
They like rotten food.
They like rotten food. And it's bacteria that's making that food rotten. Or if you get your worms from straight from a farm, they're free-range worms. They might have roly-polies and other kinds of critters in there. And those are really beneficial because they will be the first ones to eat what they need from the fresh food. And then they'll be done and they'll go somewhere else. And then the worms will come in and eat what they need. And then they excrete castings, which is worm poop, basically.
Do you want to put the worm box in a dark spot or a light spot?
The most important thing is to put the bin in a spot that has a consistent temperature. So that could be underneath your sink or in a closet, not by a door because the temperature changes too much. Worms are really comfortable somewhere between 60 and 70 degrees. But if the temperature fluctuates too much, you're going to have all sorts of problems. And that's what I've personally experienced. In my old apartment, I was in sort of a basement, and they were fine because it was always a really consistent temperature. But then when we moved to the top floor of the South Meadow Apartments, and the heat just gets crazy, especially in the wintertime. You know, we've had weeks where we'll go from 68 degrees to 80 degrees the next day in our apartment, and they don't like that. My worm bin died because of that, actually. And
so it's best to keep it between 65 and 70 keep it in a place where it's going to stay constant.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's in the light or dark.
It really doesn't matter because your worm bin should be already dark and you're already covering them with bedding. Mm-hmm. So they'll be fine. Basement, underneath the sink, in the closet, in the garage during some parts of the year.
Is it better to get a opaque bin instead of a clear bin so that it's dark in the bin?
Yeah, it's better to get an opaque one.
Okay, so they're going to start eating and maybe they're sleeping, maybe they're not. How long do you wait before you do the next thing?
So the next thing is harvesting the worm castings.
And what is a worm casting?
It's their poop, but it's filled with nutrients. It's delicious nutrients
worm
for
castings.
Plants. Yep. It's like little, you know those chocolate caffeine treats that they sell at the store? It's kind of like those, only for plants. Yeah. And depending on how finished you want your worm castings will determine how quickly you harvest them. The one method is to let them eat everything and then re-eat everything. Everything is completely digested and eaten through.
The worms will eat them again and reprocess them?
Yeah, maybe there might be some twigs that weren't completely decomposed. That's typically the less healthy way. Your worms will not breed as much, and they'll be smaller and skinnier. But your castings will be richer.
Mm-hmm.
The other method is to usually it's like every 3 months for this type of method. And then what you do is, for the method that we're talking about, just the one bin, what you could do is you shove everything to one side of the bin, and then you put some fresh food on the other side of the bin.
At the bottom of the bin?
Yep. You know, you just...
Not, you don't put bedding underneath?
No, you just, you know, part it like the Red Sea, and then...
All the way to the bottom of the bin.
Mm-hmm. And then what you do is you cover it, maybe with a lid or something, and then in a couple of weeks, the worms will gradually go over to where the food is at. And then you're left with all the castings and undecomposed stuff that they left behind. So then you just kind of sort through everything. And
so the castings are mixed together with the leaves and the paper, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you separate them or do you need to?
Typically, at some point in time, you know, maybe 3 months from where you put your bin together, you decide, okay, we are going to stop feeding them. Maybe give them some paper. You keep watering them, but you just stop feeding them for about a week or two. And then you part them. You have your worms and all the undecomposed stuff on this side.
So you keep doing that for about 3 months?
Mm-hmm.
What happens?
Then you say, all right, we are going to harvest the castings soon. And that's when you say, you're going on a diet. You know, you just stop feeding them and they'll be fine. They'll just keep eating or re-eating things. And then you separate, you put all your worms on one side.
So how long do you put them on the diet?
Only for like a week or two.
So you stop feeding them for 2 weeks?
Something like that, a week or two.
And then you say, okay, now we're going to harvest.
Yeah. So what you do is the moment you decide you want to harvest, you just take your bin and you shove it all to one side.
Everything, just everything to one side.
Everything to one side.
It doesn't matter if it's mixed up with each other.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's mixed up, undigested, or whatever. Okay. Just shove it all to one side. Or, you know, you could just dump it all in another box, a bigger box to make it easier.
Okay.
Either way, everything's going to one side. And then your fresh food's going on the other side. And over the span of about a week or two, your worms will gradually go over to the new food that's there because it's all old stuff over here and all the dessert's over there.
So that's a reason not to put it in another bin.
Mm-hmm.
So you just basically divide your bin between old stuff and new food.
Mm-hmm.
And on the new side, you don't put any bedding below? You just put it in there?
I don't. It just makes it more complicated.
Okay.
Things get in the way. So then your worms are crawling over there, and then 2 weeks later you go back. You just start separating, you know, the twigs or anything. If you had flowers you cut up or something, you put it over by the new food again, just separating things. And then, you know, it's okay if there's some eggshells or bits of shredded paper in there. And what I do is I take all those worm castings and I put it in my potting soil. I have a big bag of potting soil and I just mix it in there.
So you take out the castings and there's paper mixed in with it?
Yeah, there might even be some worms still in there and maybe they got confused. Or
so you can maybe pull the worms out?
Yeah, you just toss them back where they're supposed
to be. But the paper's okay mixed in with the castings?
Yeah, the paper's all right. Mm-hmm. It's not going to hurt anything. And I am not that meticulous that I want to take out every piece of shredded paper. So I just leave it.
Is the castings mixed in with the paper or is it kind of is it separate from it?
It's mixed in. Like over time it'll just...
So okay. You can just kind of grab all that stuff.
Yeah, you just grab it all and you put it...
And you put it in, you mix it in with a bag of potting soil that you have.
I mix it in with a bag of potting soil because I have an apartment and I do plants indoors. If it's in the wintertime, you can put it in a bag, roll it up, seal it nice and tight, and then put it in a cool environment where it will stay moist. The key is to make sure it stays moist. If it's in the summertime or in the fall, you just take it straight to your garden. You can sprinkle it on your lawn or in your beds, or you can put it in your other compost pile for it to get mixed in. The important thing is it's a soil additive, and it shouldn't be substitute as soil because worm castings are kind of like an energy drink. If you were to plant a seed right in there, the plant will shoot up, but then it'll just die.
Mm-hmm. So it's fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
Fertilizer for all plants or particular types of plants?
All plants, anything. It's been recommended for transplanting to reduce the risk of transplant shock.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really good.
If you were potting a plant, what would be the ratio of potting soil to worm castings?
I do a ratio of 3 parts potting soil and 1 part castings.
Okay. And if it's in your garden, you just sprinkle it on top of your garden?
Just kind of mix it in.
Do you have to mix it into the soil or is sprinkling it on top enough?
Mixing in is probably better.
Mm-hmm.
If you do the method where you're collecting worm tea, you know, the water is draining out, that's worm tea. You can spray that on your plants or mix it in with the soil. And from what I hear, it helps keep away pests and other nasty insects.
So the worm tea is the water that drains out of the bottom of your thing?
Yeah.
Do you need to dilute it at all?
No, you don't.
You can just collect it in a jar once in a while so it doesn't evaporate?
Yeah.
And then you can pour it on your garden or your plants at home?
Yeah. I mean, you want to do a little bit because worm castings, it's very, very dense.
Okay.
Some people do dilute it. Worm tea is basically water that's drained through worm castings.
So this is a form of making fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, if you're digging holes for your tomato plants, does it make sense to throw some worm castings in the bottom of your hole for the tomato?
Yeah, just like how you would with normal compost.
That needs to be said about vermiculture? Vermiculture?
Vermicomposting, vermiculture, worm composting.
Vermicomposting.
It'll be fine. really easy. Some people are really afraid of the smell and, oh, I might fail, but it's okay if you fail. Like, every vermicomposter that I know has epically failed with their worm bin in one way or another. And
failure means you killed your worms,
you
right?
You killed your worms and you're just sad and it sucks, but just, you know, get back on it.
Try it again.
Try it again and use your new wisdom. And it's great for reducing food waste, and that's a huge issue in the world. So,
okay, well, I'm going to go home and do it.
Yeah, totally should. We have worms in our office.
I have bags of leaves in my garage that I've been trying to figure out what to do with them.
I mean, you could feed them leaves, too.
Do they eat leaves?
Yeah, they'll eat it.
If I threw a bunch of worms in the bags,
they'll just eat it.
The bags of leaves, is that?
I don't see why that shouldn't
work. Would that work?
Yeah, I don't see why not. Yeah, something will happen. Throw some worms in there, throw some water, and magic will happen.
Now, would it be a good idea to throw some food in there, too, or is the leaves enough for them?
Leaves should be enough. Places that do massive scale of vermiculture, they might only feed them paper or only coffee grounds.
Worm castings factory?
Yeah. There are businesses that use vermicomposting because they might have a cafeteria or something, and they want to reduce food waste, so they'll have a little place, and everything just goes there.
This is Rebecca Brown, a student at Iowa State University, a graduate student. Rebecca did a study on worm composting for her undergraduate thesis and has shared with us the step-by-step process. So any invitation you want to make at the end to encourage people to feel like this is doable?
If you really need help, you can email me, I guess. You can email me at gardens@vcstory.org. So that's GARDENS at vcstory.org.
So we've got instructions. You even have your own personal worm coach. Rebecca is willing to talk to you on the phone. Thank you very much, Rebecca.
Thank you, Ursula.
We're here today with Rebecca Brown, who is a Iowa State graduate student, and she has become an expert on worm composting.
I wouldn't say I'm an expert, but
you're getting there.
I'm getting there, yeah.
Okay. You have been listening to Heart of Iowa on Community Radio KHOI. I'm your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, and on Heart of Iowa, we feature interviews, lectures by local residents and people of note. We've been listening to an interview with Rebecca Brown, graduate student at Iowa State, and she has been explaining wormaculture or composting with worms in your own home. If you would like to listen to this show again, to get all the details, it will be posted online at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. Music you heard today was from Audio Jungle and Drifting Petals from Ralph Towner's CD, Solstice. Thank you for listening, and remember to support your local community radio station at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. Our greetings to you, and see you again on the radio.
This is your KHOI community calendar for events occurring from Saturday, May 17th to Friday, May 23rd, 2014. Cruise down to the Antique Tractor Show on Saturday, May 17th from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. Antiquated tractor lovers will congregate at the Pizza Ranch parking lot on Dayton and 11th Street in Ames to ogle a variety of these antique automotive vehicles. There will be a kids' pedal pull contest held at 1 p.m., so you can feel free to bring along those little tykes. Happy tractor viewing! Also on Saturday, May 17th, the movie Frozen will be shown at 7 p.m. at the Jack Tree Stadium on ISU's campus, gates 1, 2, and 3 only, opening at 6 p.m. This will be the second annual movie night held at Jack Tree Stadium. The public is welcome. Jack Tree Stadium is located at 1800 South 4th Street in Ames on the ISU campus. The Teen Writers Group will assemble once again on Sunday, May 18th at the Ames Public Library offices, which is temporarily housed at 620 Lincoln Way here in Ames. You can enter the fourth door south of the library to enter this creative huddle. The workshop will be led by David Zimmerman, an award-winning New York Times-reviewed author. The Teen Writers Group meets the third Sunday of each month at 2 p.m. at the Ames Public Library. Early Sunday morning, May 18th, Hickory Grove Park in Nevada offers their swim, bike, and run triathlon as part of the U.S. triathlon-sponsored Heart of America Triathlon Series with three different levels of competition available. Our local Skunk River paddlers will be floating about in their kayaks to assist swimmers in need of help. For more information, email alex@hickorygrovetriathlon.com or Brittany Hurd at brittany@hickorygrovetriathlon.com or visit their website, hickorygrovetriathlon.com. A Tai Chi class on the 19th of May, which is on a Monday beginning at 9 a.m., will be held at the Indianola Activity Center in Indianola, 2204 West 2nd Avenue for the 50-plus age group. Stretch, relax, breathe, move, and laugh with a gentle workout that improves balance, flexibility, immunity, strength, stamina, bone density, calmness, and breathing. Visit www.events.dmjuice.com for more info. Songwriter Night will be held at DG's Tap House with Happy Jack, Flavor Basket, Lesbian Poetry, and Nate Logsdon on Thursday, May 22nd, starting at 9 p.m. DJ's Tap House is located at 125 Main Street in Ames. Wow, this is one creative town. Open Jam Night with Final Mix Band will be held in Clive at the Honors Lounge on May 22nd from 9 p.m. till 1 a.m. R&B, jazz fusion, blues, hip-hop, rock and roll, and original material will be performed. Honors Lounge is located at 8410 Hickman Road in Clive. For more information, contact Del Jones at 515-274-8900. This has been your KHOY community calendar for the week. I'm Elizabeth Kutiepov. Thanks for tuning in. Enjoy that refreshing and vibrant spring weather we are having, and have a fabulous week.